Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Hello, and welcome to Cool People Did Cool Stuff, your podcast about... Wait a second, Sophie's not here. We can do anything we want. Hello, and welcome to Hollywood. Let's talk about Hollywood. That's a real place, and we care about the people there. Shereen, do you think that's a good podcast? I feel like we'll be the first people to come up with that kind of podcast.
Yeah, it's going to be a big hit, smash hit.
Yeah. We're going to get some
celebrities.
We're looking at
that podcast money.
Hell yeah. Maybe we should we'll do that later. First, we'll do a Cool People Did Cool Stuff.
Okay, yeah. I guess we have to get that out of the way first.
Yeah. Okay, great.
We'll jump in.
Because I'm really excited about today's guest and topic. My guest today is Alinda Segata, and the principal songwriter, I guess is the maybe way to say it, but I'm not entirely certain, of one of the best bands out there. Hooray for the riffraff. Alinda, how are you?
I'm good. I'm on a wild journey of life, but I'm really happy to be here and I've missed you.
Yay. Yeah. I keep finding my guests are like my old friends from back in the day in a nice way. And Alinda and I know each other from New York many, many years ago.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Alinda, I was going to describe your music and then I realized I don't know how to. Is there like a catchy one sentence version that you use?
I guess like sometimes I say folk rock.
Okay.
Because I feel like people nod when I say that.
Okay.
You know?
I will go out. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, there's rock in it, but it's also folk.
Yeah. I will say to anyone who, I don't usually like folk rock, as is described. Yeah. And I really like Hooray for the Riff Raff. So if anyone...
Good.
Yeah. Everyone should
What
go
would
listen.
You call it? Also, one time somebody called it folk punk, and I was like, whoa, I felt like younger me was really excited. But only younger me.
I used to distinguish between folk punk and punks playing folk. Because folk punk is when you take the punk vocals and put them over folk instrumentation.
Exactly.
And then punks playing folk is when punks play folk music.
Yes.
And I like that one more, I gotta admit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I once stopped playing shows because I was playing shows with an accordion. And I told this other person I played with, I was like, oh, I don't usually like folk punk, but I really liked your set. And he got really offended. And he was like, which is fair, it was a dumb thing for me to have said. And he was like, well, what do you call what you do? And then I stopped playing shows.
Oh,
I
my God.
I didn't want to be folk
the power.
Anyway, that's not what we're talking about today. We are not talking about folk punk today. Okay, well, first, as people might have noticed, our producer, Sophie, is not with us. Instead, we have Shereen, at least partly, but otherwise we're flying solo.
I believe in you.
Thank you. That's... I'll claim that I do too, so that everyone feels safe. Our audio engineer is Ian. Hi, Ian. And our theme music was written for us by Unwoman. And our topic today, Alinda, people talk a lot about like getting shit done, but usually they don't get shit done. They talk about getting shit done.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're going to talk about some people who got shit done. This was the thing that I kept running over and over again, was just like getting shit done, be out of they got so much done that this is our second four-parter. There's 2 weeks that we're going to be talking about a street gang that turned into revolutionary socialists who fought for change, and they only got the tiniest portion of what they wanted, and they still got more than almost anyone I ever read about. In case anyone's wondering, anyone who's listening, if you were wondering, huh, I wonder if the reason that the trash gets picked up is because of people rioting. I wonder if the reason that people don't use lead paint anymore is because of militant demonstrators who were threatening to overthrow capitalism. And was it people committed to the destruction of capitalism who brought us the patient's bill of rights and the fact that sometimes we're treated okay at hospitals? The answer is yes. Because today we're going to talk about the Young Lords. Alinda, have you heard of the Young Lords?
I have heard of the Young Lords. I was very deeply affected by learning about them some years ago. And it like really changed my music and it changed my life.
That's cool. The reason Alinda is the guest for this is that I started writing the script for someone else. And then I was name dropping Alinda and one of their songs in the script. And then I was like, Alinda should be the guest for this. And then Alinda said yes.
I'm so really excited to learn about them. You know,
yeah.
I've had the emotional experience of learning some about the Young Lords, but I'm ready to deep dive.
Fuck yeah. Okay, so today we're going to talk about this week and next week. We're going to talk about some of the amazing stuff done by the Puerto Rican radicals in the continental United States. And that means we should at least briefly talk about Puerto Rico itself. Puerto Rico is an American colony. The U.S. doesn't like to use that word. They use the word unincorporated territory.
Whoa.
Yeah, it means colony.
I've heard commonwealth my whole life.
Oh, okay.
Which is, mm-hmm. Well, I just think it's a very silly term when it's like, there is no commonwealth.
Yeah. Well, that's why people in the United States have the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. It was all extracted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the U.S. got this colony in 1898 by the usual means of getting colonies through war. And in this case, they stole it from Spain as the result of the Spanish-American War. Spain, of course, had stolen it in the first place. They stole it from the indigenous people of the island back in 1508. Puerto Rico. So it becomes a colony of the U.S. instead of Spain. And then in 1917, Puerto Ricans were suddenly granted U.S. citizenship, which was so benevolent. It was just a strange coincidence that this was just in time for all the Puerto Rican men to get drafted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the U.S. gave Puerto Ricans U.S. citizenship because they wanted to throw them into the meat grinder of World War I. And the entire Puerto Rican House of Delegates, like the local governance in Puerto Rico, voted against getting U.S. citizenship because they were like,
oh, whoa.
Yeah. And that part actually a little bit surprised me because a lot of, you know, U.S. statehood is a big part of a lot of Puerto Rican movement stuff now, right? And we're going to talk a little bit about that. But they knew it was a fucking trick, as far as I can tell. They were just like,
yeah,
no, why would we go off and do this? So ever since, Puerto Rican folks have been fighting for, and this depends on who you ask. Some people are fighting for independence from the U.S. Some people are fighting for statehood. Either way, people are fighting. I'm kind of curious whether, like, in your family, whether, like, there's a strong sense of statehood, independence, that kind of thing. Like,
it really depends. It's like, I think there's definitely exhaustion that my family has, I think, is pretty common to Puerto Ricans who, you know, I don't really have a lot of family on the island anymore. Mm-hmm. And it seems like my family is very much like, well, how would the island survive if we weren't owned by the U.S. at this point? Like an exhaustion of this idea of independence even being possible. But then there are certain people, like, you know, there's like some more radically leaning people in my family that are just like, the point is to try. The point is to figure it out, you know?
Yeah. And I think like it's like useful to understand and be sympathetic to both of those positions.
Yeah.
For me, as someone who's not Puerto Rican, is just being like, all right, like independence, the more radical thing sounds always cooler to me, but I'm like, I could get people just trying for what they can, you know?
Yeah. And I feel that too, even being like a Puerto Rican person that wasn't brought up on the island, I'm like, what right do I have to tell people how to like to make a decision that really it affects them? It doesn't affect me, you know, it affects their daily life. So I definitely try to be aware of that, especially with like having a band and being sometimes the only Puerto Rican person that someone's ever talked to.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, part four of this episode will be particularly interesting as relates to not the band part, but the mainland U.S. Puerto Ricans. And we'll talk about that later. Everyone's going to have to wait a little bit. So the U.S., they want Puerto Rico still. And it is part of the U.S. exercising power across the globe. It's not like some benevolence thing that we have this fucking colony. The majority of U.S. interventions in Latin America are staged on the island of Puerto Rico.
Oh, wow.
And since Puerto Rico is a colony, it means the U.S. is out to extract whatever value it can from the island, which in 1917 meant grist for the mill. Post-World War II, it was something different, but something related. It was need workers. We need workers because so many of ours just died because we just fought World War II. So please, everyone, come over. And so between 1947 and 1970, a third of the population of Puerto Rico moved to the United States, looking for something like stability and a decent life. Disproportionately, this was youth who came, and 90% of them went, at least to begin with, to New York City. This mass immigration started because of a U.S. project called Operation Bootstrap, which was this massive spike in industrialization that displaced people even as it like put in power lines. So it was like kind of like, oh, we're doing all this nice stuff. We're bringing in power lines and industry and infrastructure, but it just fucked everything up. It was openly an attempt to stabilize the political situation in the colony and make it more useful for U.S. interests. The sugar economy, which was also bad, but it was like what Spain was mostly up to, was replaced by industrialization, also bad. And U.S. investment in capitalism just like poured into Puerto Rico. So Puerto Rican folks led the fucking up of their country and moved to the U.S., where they were welcomed with open arms, economic opportunity, good living conditions, the American dream, and no, it's the opposite of that. Puerto Rican immigrants, was even immigrants the right word? I mean, you know, people coming from
so
Puerto Rico.
Then,
yeah.
Yeah.
Met with violence, nativism, bigotry, racism, classism instead. Puerto Ricans in the U.S. were immediately slandered as junkies and thugs and welfare dependents, the same as marginalized people always are. They're treated like illegal immigrants, which of course is not true. And obviously undocumented people should also be treated well and fuck borders. But in this case, literally it's U.S. citizens moving to another part of the U.S. And they'd come over basically at the behest of the U.S. government to work. But the piece of shit racists didn't like thinking, period.
Yeah, this is actually when my family came over, is like around 1947.
Oh, okay. Oh, damn. Yeah. So like kind of like first wave of all this stuff.
Yeah, my dad came over when he was a kid, and he has this story about being on a plane that the chairs were actually like lawn chairs, and that my grandmother came with like her three kids because my grandfather was already over in New York working. Mm-hmm. And like, it just being like, okay, I'm sure they were like somehow bolted down, but just like this totally crazy experience of like, let's get as many of these people over as we can, you know?
That's fucking, I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but I just had never even imagined that kind of like, yeah, like I wonder how I never really thought about how folks came over, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Operation Bootstrap had another impact. It showed the world that the quote-unquote third world was open for business. And I think it was like one of the things that kind of started the industrial economy disappearing from the United States as industrialization has moved out to the colonies and to the sort of, you know, in a neoliberal sense, you can kind of claim that most of the quote-unquote developing world is colonies for the rich nations, you know. So there's a weird, awful downside to this. Millions of people are showing up for looking for work in the cities because they've been told to come over and get work in the cities. Just as the U.S. is like starting to eradicate industrialization within the continental United States. And so there's not a lot of work. In 1966, A study found that the unemployment or underemployment of Puerto Rican men in East Harlem, or what's called Spanish Harlem or El Barrio, was 47%. Half the Puerto Rican families in New York lived worse than immigrant families in New York during the fucking Great Depression. So by 1966, 20% of the students in New York City were Puerto Rican and 30% were Black, which means it's the first time that white people weren't the majority in New York City in the schools.
Whoa.
And I don't know if you knew this, but white people don't historically like that.
They don't. Yeah, it's not a... not a cool look.
Yeah, yeah. They haven't figured out. They're like, they don't want to get treated like they've been treating people, you know?
Yeah.
So 2,000 white parents picketed City Hall over school integration. In 1964, almost 500,000 white students stayed home in a boycott protest organized by their racist fucking parents in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, 500,000 fucking kids didn't go to school in protest of there being people of color in their schools. And like, white Northerners have this attitude that like, white Southerners are the only racist people.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we'll come back to New York later. Okay. Our story winds up in New York, but it starts in Chicago.
Yeah.
In Chicago in 1954, some white assholes firebombed a Puerto Rican bar and an apartment, which led to a week of fighting. And it led to non-white gangs forming for self-defense. Specifically, Puerto Rican, Mexican, and Black gangs started forming in Chicago in the 1950s. And you got a bunch of capitalists exploiting this racist fear. White people started fleeing Chicago in the 50s out to the suburbs, the classic white flight. The white people who stayed in Chicago were like really paranoid about Black people driving down their property values or whatever. So these real estate assholes who created the racist panic in the first place would get white people to sell at a loss and basically like stoke these fears in order to make money and flip houses. And it was kind of like domino style. And so like the white flight was like both racist cowards and also racist capitalists were looking to exploit the fear of them. Racist capitalists, racist cowards. And that's the condition into which our very young heroes, or lords, as we might call them, enter our story.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to talk about some other heroes, capitalism and products and services that support our show because we're ad sponsored. And now you can listen to those ads.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
And we're back. And we are talking about the beginning of the Young Lords. They formed as a street gang in 1959 in Lincoln Park in Chicago. They were formed by 7 kids. 6 of them were Puerto Rican. 1 of them was Mexican. And this part I didn't know. What I mean it when I say kids. How old do you think these kids were?
I mean, I always imagined like mid-20s, but I know that's wrong.
Yeah, like half that. Some Whoa. Of them are like 11.
What?
Yeah. In fact...
Whoa, like actual children.
Yeah. The kind of like main founder of the... We'll get to this. Like one of our like heroes that we're going to talk about, Jose Chacha Jimenez.
Uh-huh.
He was 11 years old in 1959 when he was a founding member of this gang. Yeah.
That actually... Okay, that reminds me though. Have you heard... There is a story about kids in Puerto Rico, talking about kids not going to school, about mm-hmm. kids in Puerto Rico like not going to school in protest of this... time when they were trying to make, when the U.S. was trying to force like English to be the official language of the school system.
Oh, no, this is cool. No.
Yeah. So there is, I don't know a lot about it, but there is like a history of Puerto Rican children being yeah. like, yeah, fuck you.
Fuck
we're just
yeah.
not going to go. You know?
Fuck so, yeah. Which so is the opposite of this. Sorry, go ahead.
It's in the blood.
Yeah. And it's the opposite of those 500,000 white kids who are like, we don't want to go to school because there might someone at school speaking Spanish. I can't handle it.
Yeah.
God forbid.
Wow, 11.
Yeah. Jose Chacha Jimenez, he was a founding member. He's 11 years old. By the time he was 14, he was a petty crook. He got caught a bunch going in and out of facilities all the time. His Catholic parents had come over from Puerto Rico with him when he was 2. His mom passed. When they moved to Chicago, his mom packed Christmas cards for a living and his dad worked in a meat packing plant. As the city redeveloped and tore down everything and like fucked over all the poor people, they moved 9 times in the first 6 years they lived in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Where they wound up in Lincoln Park was like diverse, quote unquote, but it was segregated block by block. His mom pulled a bunch of strings to get him put into a Catholic school because she'd been raised in a Catholic poorhouse. And had connections, but this will be shocking to you. So the priests at this school, not so cool. They were all a bunch of racists. They used the N-word constantly.
Whoa.
They just fucking hated these, like, I, as best as I can tell, it was like white Catholics, and they were like, fuck, go, why did, and it's like, honey, that's on you. Your missionaries went and turned all these people of color into, you know.
My family had so many stories about like nuns, mm-hmm. like hitting them with rulers and shit. Yeah. Like, luckily I was able to grow up not, like we went to mass, like for yeah. Christmas, but I was raised by a bunch of like hippies basically that got hit by nuns who were just like, fuck that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky.
Yeah, that... Yeah, my dad went to Catholic school, so I didn't have to.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So this is where he's getting raised, how he's getting raised. His dad had actually been in a gang himself, La Hacha Vieja, the Old Hatchet, which is the oldest known Puerto Rican street gang in at least Chicago. I'm unsure if there's older Puerto Rican street gangs in the United States. I tried looking and like it would come back being like 1970. And I'm like, no, that's not the oldest one.
Well, cool name, though.
I know, right? And especially...
That'd be a sick band name.
Okay, but you're breaking my rule. I have, like... If there's, like, Margaret's Law, it's that everyone who says that would be a cool band name is wrong. But this actually would be a good band name.
Like, okay, I won.
Yeah, you broke the law. Band jail, you have to go to. Yeah, I know, and especially because the Old Hatchet was probably a bunch of teenagers, right? Like,
yeah, the only like Puerto Rican street gang I know about is the Ghetto Brothers.
Okay. I know. I don't know about
that. I think that was later on.
Okay.
And they eventually became a band.
Oh, word.
Yeah. So
different than the Ghetto Boys.
Yes.
Great.
Different.
I was like, okay. So the history, I feel like it's worth pointing out if I'm talking about this street gang, right? And people have like various impressions about street gangs, depending on where you live and all of these things. But it's like really worth understanding why people are forming a street gang. There is a long history of ethnic gangs in Chicago. This is not a nice history. It goes back into the late 19th century when German and Irish youth crewed up, not with each other, but with other German and the Germans with the Irish, because everyone's fucking bullshit. in order to be shitty to more recent immigrants. That's where ethnic gangs come from in Chicago. And this tied very happily and easily into the city's politics. The city gave the gangs resources, and the kids would grow up and join the more formal political structure. They all became cops and firefighters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's this criminal justice professor guy. His name's John M. Hagedorn. And his quote is, "The Irish gang, in effect, was reinvented as the Chicago Police Department."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Corruption and Chicago go a long history together.
Yeah.
So the white ethnic gangs continue to be fucked up, whether before joining the cops or after joining the cops. And they did a bunch of racist shit time and time again as black labor moved into the city. And so I feel like this is important to understand when we talk about the development of non-white gangs in the U.S. more broadly, right? Because like a huge part of racism is like being like, but the gangs or whatever, you know?
Totally.
And it's like, okay, they came from defending themselves against you.
Yeah, for real.
Which isn't to say, whatever, we'll talk about some of what they got up to and, you know, it's complicated, right? So Cha-Cha starts a gang when he's 11 because white gangs have been fucking with him for a year already. Since he's 10 years old, he's used to white gangs, like, because the white kids in the area outnumbered everyone else 17 to 1 at that point, demographically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he gets his nickname because racist kids keep saying Cha-Cha-Cha every time they see him.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, all right, fuck it. That's my name. I'm Cha-Cha.
And he just becomes a badass.
I know. And it like, be like a scary name to run into someone who's like fucking with you.
Like,
Cha-Cha.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like you go and like, someone's like, maybe picking a fight with you. And you're like, what's your name? And they're like, Tiddlywinks. And you're like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
I hear my mom calling.
Yeah. Like you've seen some shit.
Yeah. They met up at a junior high school, the Young Lords. Their founder was this darker-skinned Puerto Rican kid, Orlando Davila, who was read as black and got even more shit from people from which he learned to defend himself. And I'm kind of curious your take on this part, because it's like this is something I can like read about. But there's this there's this interesting writing about race relations in the Puerto Rican immigrants at the time. For most immigrants, the Puerto Rican ethnicity was far more important than their race as viewed by other people in the continental U.S. So like Cha-Cha had green eyes and light skin. Orlando was red as black. But for the second generation, American views, like mainland American group views, crept in more. And more younger Puerto Ricans identified with black struggle. And their parents were largely trying to distinguish themselves from black struggle.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I have like, especially in my family, it's like I have so much white privilege, you know? And I feel like definitely I witnessed a lot of racism get just like crammed into my family's minds. I think like what I've experienced is also like a lot of pride about like not being considered immigrants.
Right.
Even though they have this immigrant experience, it's like the classic American thing where it's like, well, we are one step closer to this pyramid, the top of the pyramid, than people who are dealing with immigration status. We don't have to deal with that, you know? And racism and colorism definitely was something that I saw all the time.
Okay. And
yeah.
That makes sense. Like one of the things I have a hardest time, because again, I'm mostly just reading about this stuff, and everyone who's writing has different, you know, things that they're trying to say or not say, right? And like, so like sometimes I read about like all of the awful interfighting, but horizontal conflict between black New Yorkers and Puerto Rican New Yorkers, right? And then other places I'll read about all of these like moments of solidarity and people will be like, oh, we all got along. And like,
yeah,
I have a feeling the answer is both, maybe, you know?
I think so. I mean, also, like I said, there was a generation like who was radicalized. And then after, you know, not to jump ahead, but then they experienced the fucking 80s and it's like such disillusionment. Mm-hmm. And then my generation comes. And I feel like it's only now that I'm seeing kids like get radicalized in the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, so I don't know. I think there is more like solidarity now, but I also feel like a white kid looking in.
Right.
You know, also an interesting thing in New York, at least, is the fighting between Dominican and Puerto Rican.
Oh, okay.
People. That was something I witnessed a lot because of like immigration status yeah. and also racism.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. It's, I love is not the right word, but I'm so interested in all these things that like complicate the mainstream conception of like the racial mm-hmm. hierarchy, right? And like, you know, the fact that Puerto Rican immigrants would be coming from different ethnic backgrounds with, or different racial backgrounds, I guess you would say, from Puerto Rico. Whereas like to like the people who live in the US, maybe it was like, whatever, you're all fucking Puerto Ricans, fuck you, you know, as compared yeah. to like white Puerto Ricans and black Puerto Ricans. And I don't know enough about race relations within Puerto Rico. I've only read about them and how they relate to the mainland.
Yeah, I feel like I've definitely experienced like, you know, I get this like platform and because mm-hmm. I feel like I just make people feel more comfortable. They're like, oh, I understand you more. Or like, yeah. I don't have to experience that racism. So I think certain Puerto Ricans that are super light skinned, it's not, I think, I know, like yeah. we get these, you know, platforms and experience, you know,
yeah.
these opportunities and shit. And J-Lo becomes like the idea of what being Puerto Rican is instead of a super complex identity.
Yeah. You know? I had no idea that J-Lo was Puerto Rican, but I also...
Really?
Okay, this is the like main running in joke is that I don't know anything about pop culture.
Oh my God, yeah, Ricky Martin and J-Lo. That's
I knew about Ricky
I
Martin.
Grew up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I grew up thinking that was what being Puerto Rican was. So yeah. then to find out about the Young Lords is like a mind-altering moment where I'm like, wait, what? We're like revolutionary fucking fighters? This is crazy.
Yeah.
I thought we were just like... puppet, you know, like I was just raised with this idea of yeah. of what it was.
Yeah, I mean the, well, I guess we'll get to it. Yeah, the death knell of yeah. everything in the '80s and all that. Is the kind of sad thing about like cool people in history, and you're like, well, if you tell the story long enough, it, but there's amazing stuff yeah. along the way, which is all any of us have as our lives anyway, right? Like all of it. So they're a gang now. Let's come back to okay. Chicago, 1950s. And they immediately set out and they're like 11 to 14, and I think maybe some of them are like 16 or whatever. And they immediately set out to wow. do gang shit. They're really into stealing cars. You gotta have a nice car. And selling stolen car parts is good money. Cha-Cha had okay. white passing privilege. So he was the kid who would do the initial stealing. Also, probably the fact that he's like a white passing 11-year-old is probably part of how he got away with this, you know?
My God.
Yeah. And then the Young Lords immediately got to fighting anyone who fucked with them. And they immediately started getting arrested for weapons possession, assault, petty theft, and drugs. Most of the fighting they did, this is like where they, was they would forcefully integrate places that were informally whites only.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When older folks would get pushed around, like older Puerto Rican folks, and would get pushed around or slapped for being in the wrong place. There's like the Lakeshore Drive beach. The Young Lords would just yeah. show up and be like, no, nah, that's cool. We're allowed to be here. Like,
wow.
That beach in particular, they fought with broken bottles and knives for the right to swim there.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I really
they're
like
little
them.
Badasses.
Yeah. I know. I like, my friend who turned me on to, I'd heard some about the Young Lords, but not like a ton, right? And my friend was like, you really need to do an episode on them. And it ties into, there's like some stuff that keeps coming up over and over again. We're going to talk about tuberculosis in this episode. For some reason, tuberculosis is this running theme throughout all these things.
Whoa.
And it's going to come up, but not yet.
Okay.
But yeah, so, and the white gangs would fight back, right? You know, the, I presume German and Irish gangs would fight back and try and fight the Young Lords and be like, no, we want our whites only beach or whatever. But eventually the white gangs relented. And I'm under the impression this isn't less because the Young Lords always won and more because they always fought. And I think that this is how oppressive power works. You don't even need to always win. You just need to keep fighting and they'll back off first because they have more to lose, right? They're more privileged.
Wow, what a great lesson to like keep in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. When Cha-Cha was 15, he found himself increasingly in charge of the gang because he was willing to do the paperwork for the gang.
what did like paperwork entail?
So... he was the business manager, and he would raise money to get everyone in the gang black and purple sweaters. And Yeah. And they would throw soul dance parties, and that's how they would raise the money. And so he was this fundraiser.
I want to go to one of those parties.
Yeah. And he was like, he wasn't afraid to throw down, but he was always also trying to figure out nonviolent solutions to most problems. He still fought a lot. He got arrested 20 times over the course of his young life, like only a couple
Holy
years.
Shit.
So I really like this, like, this is my favorite version of nonviolence, is the like, our preference is nonviolence, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
but, but if I must.
Yeah. We're going to swim at this beach. Nonviolently, ideally.
Yeah, ideally.
All right. So then he's 16. And he might be 15 or something. I get the year something happened and not the age of the person, so I do rough math. And he gets sentenced to, I don't remember what he got caught for this time. He gets sentenced to go live in Puerto Rico for a year. The judge is like,
whoa.
Yeah, I didn't know this was a thing. It was an assault that would have had him in prison for years. And I think that the judge was just actually like, you dumb fucking kid. Go get out of here. You know, like.
Wow, yeah.
So he goes to Puerto Rico. And while he's there, he tries to get up to all his usual shit. At one point, he steals a horse to ride off to go hotwire a priest's car in order to go see a girl he likes.
Wow. True romance.
Yeah, exactly. I know. But they catch him and they don't throw him in jail when he's in Puerto Rico. Instead, they chew him out in public. Like, I think in like the town square, basically. A priest and then an older woman just like yell at him for being a fuck up in front of everyone.
Oh my God.
And this works. I mean, he does it like 180, but it's way more effective than getting sent to jail.
Totally.
And going to Puerto Rico is like a sea change. He has two main sea change moments about how he becomes who he becomes. And going to Puerto Rico is one of them. He did come back and a week later go to jail for stealing a toaster.
Okay.
So he's not 180. New habits, they take a little while to catch on. Much like what also takes a while to catch on are products and services. And that's why you have to hear about them over and over again before they stick in your mind. And you know that we've had really bad sponsors lately. The main bad one is Reagan Gold. So go buy gold. That'll teach them.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
And we're back. Oh, we should have thought of, now that we're back from a break, I want to go back to being sponsored by really nice stuff. Historically, some of the things that we got sponsored by, for a long time, we were sponsored by the concept of potatoes. We've also been sponsored.
No.
Well, not officially, but our unofficial sponsors, the concept of potatoes.
Okay.
And we've also been sponsored by like a nice comb. The Happy Sleeping Dogs is a good sponsor for the show. And so I'm wondering if you have any sponsors you'd like us, when Sophie is back, Sophie will get us sponsored by whatever you want.
You know, lately I've been really into baby elephants in general, especially baby elephants bathing.
Okay. Okay.
So if that's a possibility.
We can do it. Sophie is really good at shit. And this show is brought to you by baby elephants bathing. Go watch videos of baby elephants and see them be cute. And that is substantially better than buying fucking gold. Yeah. In 1966 in Chicago, you have the Division Street Riots. Chicago declared Puerto Rican Week, which included the city's first Puerto Rican parade. Cops were there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And the cops were super respectful. No, the cops were being cops, so they shot someone. They shot someone in the leg during the celebrations. And so a crowd showed up. And then cops sicked a dog on someone. And the crowd went wild. And the rioting went on for 3 days, destroying 50 white-owned businesses that ran through a Puerto Rican neighborhood.
Holy shit.
And Cha-Cha was sitting in jail during this, and he was just like, for something else, maybe the toaster, I'm not sure. And so he's just cheering it on, right? He's like, go kids, go, this rules, you know?
Yeah.
Other young lords are involved in the organizing in the wake of it for structural change. And a bunch of new groups pop up in the wake of this. And the most influential one, or the one that I keep reading about in the books that I was reading about this, is the Latin American Defense Organization, or LADO, LADO.
Oh, wow.
And they rule. They spread across the country. They bring together working class Latin Americans. But the young lords, they're not ready to be a socialist organization quite yet. In fact, they're starting to drift apart. Members grew up, they get married, they join the military, they go to prison for a long time because they keep doing crime. In 1968, Cha-Cha is in prison again. I think he's doing a 60-day stint for heroin possession. This is another thing no one likes talking about in all the history. Everyone who's listening has heard me go on about this before, but like, they always cut so much shit out of history books. They never talk about how a bunch of our heroes were drug users, how a bunch of our heroes were sex workers, a bunch of our heroes were like, had specific political ideologies. Like there's all this stuff that gets cut out. And so I don't know much about Cha-Cha's drug use. I do know a lot about how the young lords dealt with heroin use in New York, and we'll talk about that later.
Oh, I'm really interested in that.
Cool. It's really interesting. Yeah, like I'm really excited about this. Everyone knows this. So he's doing a 60-day stint for heroin possession. And in prison, this is his second sea change moment. A bunch of shit that happens solidifies his future politics. First, he's in prison when MLK is assassinated. Second, a bunch of Spanish-speaking prisoners, including him, get thrown into solitary for basically no reason. And a guard tries to call him white in order to get black prisoners to beat him up, to like race bait people against each other. But a black prisoner stood up for him. And that black prisoner said a few simple words that everyone needs to shout from time to time. Shut the fuck up, you pig.
Wow.
And so Cha-Cha's like, oh, cross-racial solidarity is real, right? And while he's in solitary, he likes to read. And the Nation of Islam is in prisons because they get arrested a lot. And they would get themselves jobs in prison libraries in order to provide radical books to people, which is fucking rad. And so he starts reading Martin Luther King. He starts reading Malcolm X. He also started reading a book called The Seven Story Mountain, written by a radical Catholic monk named Thomas Merton.
Oh, gonna look that up immediately.
Yeah, he was super social justice-y in his faith. He was really into interfaith understandings. Like all of his like theological books are about like why Catholicism isn't the only way, even though it's his way or whatever. How different people from different religions can get along and understand each other. And like, including not just like the monotheistic religions, but like he writes a lot about, I didn't write this in my script, but I think it was Buddhism, but I don't remember. And he's really into writing, fighting racism and war. And he has this quote I really like. The world is full of great criminals with enormous power, and they are in a death struggle with each other. It is a huge gang battle, using well-meaning lawyers and policemen and clergymen as their front, controlling papers, means of communication, and enrolling everybody in their armies.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah.
What is his name again?
His name is Thomas Merton. I haven't read his books yet. Okay. I really like this weird, like, yeah, he reads MLK, he reads Malcolm X, he reads Thomas Merton. And then he gets out of prison and he's like, you know, we need something like the Black Panthers. Good thing I'm the leader of a gang.
Nice.
What will he do? Who's to say? You certainly can't go read a book or some article on some website. You have to wait until Wednesday for part two of this epic 4-part series on the Young Lords. But first, before people wait until Wednesday, they should hear more about you and what you've been working on and how people can find you.
Well, I actually am working on a new album, so that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. I just put out an album last year mm-hmm. called Life on Earth. My band's called Hooray for the Riff Raff. And you can find me on all the social medias, even though Twitter scares the fuck out of me, so I don't really hang out there. I'm like trying to figure out how to exist on the internet without it severely damaging me. I think we all are.
Yeah.
But Instagram, you know, all those places. You could probably see me on tour. You should do that, definitely.
Ooh, when are you going on tour?
I'll be on tour in May on the West Coast. I don't know when this will come out.
This will come
out. And then in July.
Before then.
Yeah. Oh, cool. So I'll be on tour in May on the West Coast. And in July, I'll be like through the Midwest.
Cool.
And some other places. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And you seriously owe it to yourself to go check out Hooray for the Riff Raff if you haven't heard it before. Or if you came here to listen to this because you like Alinda, thanks for listening. And I hope you stick around for Wednesday. And you can follow me on the internet at Magpie Killjoy on Twitter, which I also hate, but I'm there.
You're so good at it, though.
Thank you. All I do is get really sad about it at least once a week. And Instagram at Margaret Killjoy, where I mostly post pictures of my dog as I go hiking.
Really cute dog.
Thanks. I like him. And I will see everyone on Wednesday. Farewell.
Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.